You are listening to episode 111 of the FitzPro podcast. It is crazy that we are 111 episodes into this podcast. Thank you so much for being here, for listening to what I have to say. Sometimes I forget that there's even humans that listen to me on here. So today's episode is a part one of a two-part series. So I went to record this and it was going to be way too long for a single episode for me personally. So I split it up into two parts and I am straight up just answering programming questions. So exercise program design, answering all questions from structuring programs to actually choosing set and rep schemes to possibly heart rate training, anything that you guys have asked over on Instagram, I am answering in a two-part series. So buckle up and let's go ahead and dive in. The FitzPro podcast is your no BS approach to seeking out truth in the world that is online health and fitness. You'll see through the lens of the trainer, the trainee, and the entrepreneur. I'm your host, Annie Miller, certified strength and conditioning specialist, entrepreneur, lover of sleep, lattes, and dinosaurs, aka not your average Fitzpo. And my aim is to help you grow your mind, body, and business through knowledge and authenticity so that you too can become a Fitzpro. First things first, if you are here for the business side of things, so obviously today if you are listening, you are likely a coach. If you have an online business, then I definitely encourage you to join my free on-demand workshop, Your Biz, Your Way, 3 steps to build a profitable online health and fitness business. The link to that will be in the show notes, but you can also register at anniemiller.co/workshop-register. And for anyone that wants to download any of the free resources that I have, just go to anniemiller.co/resources, and there are downloads and resources for coaches and trainees alike in the way of building a business and or lifting weights. So a while back, I asked my Instagram humans to drop all of their programming questions on one of my posts. At the time, that was actually for market research for something that I am working very, very slowly on behind the scenes, but I did not answer any of the questions at that time. I was strictly collecting the questions. So here we are using podcast episode 111 to rapid fire answer 22 programming questions. Like I said in the intro, I will not get to all 22 of those. We are splitting it up over podcast episode 111 and 112. So I will answer maybe 9 to 11 today. These have been compressed as well and combined into like topics or questions, and we will go one by one and hope that I can get through half of these or so in a timely manner. So number one, jumping right in, is how you set up individual periodization for a one-on-one client. My individual periodization is always a combination of things. The client's goals, the time that they have, the assessments that we perform, which we gather all of that information through our onboarding system. So that is how I start the periodization for a one-on-one client. You're not just periodizing a year-long program for, you know, generalization and what you want. The individual periodization is going to be based on the individual client and what information you gather from them, both like in a written onboarding form as well as assessments. I like to personally use 4 to 5 week training blocks in which workouts would repeat week to week. This way, we can gauge progress, build solid patterns, movement patterns that we are practicing. Remember that lifting weights and doing movement patterns is building a skill. And then we also know what we need to progress for the next phase because we have seen how their body is adapting or taking to their programming that we have done for the past 4 to 5 weeks. Next question. What are your first steps during intake and how do you execute them? So I'm going to assume this is onboarding and assessments. So for one-on-one, I have used several types and combinations of assessment approaches. Since taking the Active Life Immersion course, I use both the flexibility and mobility assessments as well as their strength balance testing. Some pieces have been removed as they don't apply to my clientele. I am currently reading through and trying different assessments and applications from Dr. Aaron Horschig's, and I don't know, I might be butchering his last name like every time I say it, but it's his book, Rebuilding Milo, and that addresses common injuries and building strong foundations for weightlifting. So at this current time, I use the assessments from Active Life for flexibility and mobility first, and then we go into strength balance, and that is assessing, you know, limb-to-limb discrepancies or imbalances, push-and-pull imbalances, things like that, as well as their capacity versus their strength for given exercises. Hopefully that makes sense. Next question, what movements to assess during initial assessment? So if you don't have a certification like FMS, the Functional Movement Screening, or you haven't gone through the Active Life Immersion course, nothing is stopping you from creating your own assessment. Think of what an assessment is. All you need to do is to determine what type of training your athlete will be doing and what information you need in order to determine that athlete's baseline for whatever it is that you're going to be working on, right? So this can include components like, but not limited to, flexibility. This is their passive range of motion. Mobility. That would be their joint by joint active range of motion. You can test their strength balance in reference to, like I said, side to side discrepancies, as well as pushing and pulling discrepancies. You can look at muscular endurance as well as muscular strength. You can look at cardiorespiratory endurance, so on and so forth. It's going to depend on the type of training your athlete is doing and what you need to determine for their baseline and what you will need to retest. That is why I say it's not a one size fits all. It's knowing what you're going to do with that assessment and the type of training that the athlete is going to be doing. The assessment I use from start to finish takes about 2 weeks to complete. So also change your view or idea of assessment if you're thinking about like a one-time consult. For you, maybe that's true. Maybe it is a simple one-time consult, but it's more likely not. So include what you need in your assessment and take as long as you need in order to gather that quality information in your onboarding process. Next up is how to assess for imbalances and how to work through muscle imbalances. This is going to be a two-part deal. I mean, the most simple way to assess for imbalances is to test side-to-side strength with the lower body and upper body, and then test upper body and lower body pushing and pulling exercises. There is no right or wrong choice here, but you need to be able to retest and be consistent with that. As far as imbalances, like squat dominant or pushing dominant in comparison to deadlifts or being pulling dominant, that comes down to testing strength and or endurance within those movements as well. And this is all covered in the Active Life Immersion course. I am not an affiliate for it. I just think that it's one of the best comprehensive kind of strength and hypertrophy performance assessments that you can give, that I've personally been exposed to. So take the course or create your own testing that will give you the information that you're trying to get, like, you know, deadlift to squat ratios, so on and so forth. It's super important to note, you do not have to test one rep maxes. In fact, I don't see the need for testing one rep maxes for the majority of the population, certainly not for general population. The risk to reward is not there for me. I think 5 rep max is a great test, or even choosing a weight and performing as many reps as possible in AMRAP, then using the results from that AMRAP score to determine a new weight and rep goal. This was an approach that I was exposed to when I went to Dr. Jacob Harden's Prehab 101 seminar. I had performed AMRAPs, but I had never used an AMRAP to determine a new set and rep scheme as well as a load for that. So that's an approach you could take. Now, once you determine these imbalances, the second question was how to work through muscle imbalances. So let's say that you find that your client has discrepancies from left to right. They can't perform the same amount of reps on their left arm as they can on their right arm with the same load. You need to prioritize bringing up the weak side. Ways that we can do this are adding extra volume on the weak side in comparison to the strong side. Retest until both sides are testing within, you know, one rep of one another. People are often concerned that the strong side will suffer in this. Your priority is to bring up that weak side, and then you can build both limbs together to maintain that balance. Very simple example, one way to go about it. I would say if someone had maybe their squat is super weak, so yes, a deadlift should be stronger than a squat, but if someone's squat is really lacking, you could have them squat twice per week and bring that pattern and strength up, or capacity, whichever one you needed to be working on. You could do the same with deadlifts. Maybe somebody squats more than they deadlift. We need to strengthen that pulling pattern. So adding deadlift variations twice per week is one way to increase volume and hopefully strength, hypertrophy, whatever your goal is with that. Next up, how to pair movements. So supersets and tri-set logic. This is a super fun one for me. I love supersets. And you've got so many options, which is probably why it can also be very overwhelming. How do you know what to pair with what and be able to justify that choice? So if a client says, hey coach, why did you pair hip thrusts with an RDL? Or why did you pair shoulder presses with pull-ups or lateral raises for that matter? What is the difference in pairing a shoulder press with pull-ups versus pairing a shoulder press with a lateral raise? If this was a class, you would respond now, but the answer is that shoulder press plus the pull-up is supersetting opposing muscle groups, whereas shoulder press plus lateral raises is supersetting the same primary muscle groups, being the deltoids. Neither is right or wrong, better or worse, and it's very important that we understand that as well. It's a matter of training stimulus and the goals of the program and or needs of the client. So let me give you some options for superset or trisets, and then you can use your logic to apply these to your programming. We can, like the example, pair opposing muscle groups. So both muscle groups are still likely working as an antagonist or a stabilizer. Then we can also pair the same muscle group. So the first one was opposing muscle groups. The second one is the same muscle group or primary movers. This will require longer rest between sets due to the muscle group not getting rest from the exercise to exercise. The last one is upper lower or unrelated muscle groups. So you could do something with your lower body and then something with your upper body. And this has potential to keep rest periods in between sets very low because your body parts are, you know, quote unquote resting while you are working the opposing body part or the non-related body part. Hopefully that made sense. I would love to hear and answer some more questions regarding supersets or exercise pairings and know, you know, more specifically what you guys would like to know in regards to that. But those are some ideas for you to kind of chew on for now. Next up is how to know how to include different movements. So vertical, horizontal presses, etc., push-pull ratios. So we will discuss these together. First off, you should know what movements to include based on the assessment that you did if you're working with a one-on-one client. If we're working in a group setting or a, you know, automated templated program, obviously there may not be an assessment. That's okay. But if you do have an assessment, the data will tell you if you need to focus on single limb work, which exercises or biases like vertical presses or pulling you need to include. So speaking from a general standpoint or group programming, we can look at broad standards and broad limitations that we tend to see within movement patterns or mobility restrictions, etc., etc. We know that we should be stronger at pulling than pushing. Whether you do all pushing on the same day and all pulling on another day, or you use them in the same workout, we have to look at volume of pulling to volume of pushing. You will see some people suggest a 1-to-1 ratio and others lean more towards a 1-to-2 ratio for pushing to pulling. So 1 pushing to 2 pulling. We also know that pulling strength carries over to pushing strength. So I tend to lean more towards that 1-to-2 ratio when not going off of a one-on-one assessment, when programming for just, you know, a templated program. When programming, look at your daily breakdown of vertical push and pull exercise selection, as well as your weekly volume of work. And then take a peeksie at your weekly push-pull volume. Are we tracking? Hopefully that made sense. If not, go back, listen to that again. Next up is controversial movements. So like pulling behind the neck or maybe high pulls. People really, really, really don't like high pulls. So we love this question. Why we love this question is because I consider myself a recovering movement elitist. What is a movement elitist? I don't know. I don't even know if that's a real word. Maybe there is an actual definition. If there is, I don't know. But for myself, I went through phases of thinking squats needed to be performed, narrow stance, knees out, toes forward, ass to grass, and there was no other way to squat. I used to think no pulling behind the neck or no high pulls. High pulls give you shoulder impingement injuries, period, no questions asked. Thinking neutral spine was death. How dare you have spinal flexion in a braced position? These types of absolutes within movement, that there is, you know, no gray area or nuance or individual considerations to be made. This is a movement elitist, and I am a recovering movement elitist. Very black and white thinking. Here's what I am going to say about this. Number one is always ask questions. We had a Built by Annie client the other day ask about the high pulls. She said she'd been taught that they were to be avoided and that they were a problematic exercise. We explained why we had them programmed, sent photos of high pull positions from Olympic lifts, as this athlete had experience with CrossFit. She had been exposed to that movement before, as well as sending a video of how to do them correctly and common misconceptions with them, scapular positioning, all of that action. Number two, ask yourself why you think an exercise is bad or problematic, and ask what other options might there be. So remain curious within yourself, right? Like, why do you think something about an exercise? If you think high pulls cause impingement, why do you think that? Dig a little deeper into that and how impingement might not happen, or even the definition of impingement. The third thing here is to be open to not fully knowing and being in the gray area. Be okay with just not knowing. That's something that I think especially a lot of young coaches have a hard time with. And I've actually talked about this on a few other podcast episodes of building your methodology and your philosophy within movement and within coaching, and how we kind of start with more of these really rigid ideas and they become more fluid as we learn more and are exposed to more and ask more questions. So that's my take on controversial exercises or movements or thoughts. Next up is when a client experiences tightness, how to modify and or communicate with them. That's a great question. So the only thing I will say for this one, as it's a bit out of my scope in regards to communication with the client, tightness doesn't mean short muscles or injury. Tightness can be a sensation that we feel due to having weakness in an area. You'd need to know how to assess for that. A rule of thumb here would be to test flexibility of the area, so their passive range of motion, and then mobility, and then also look at if it feels tight, if they describe the tightness as the joint is closing or the joint is opening. Because if we feel the tightness as the joint is closing, we know it's not actually tightness, right? Because the muscle would be shortening in length as the joint closes. So you would feel tight as the muscle is lengthening or the joint is opening. That is all I will say to that. Last one that I will answer for today is how to order movements. You can truly do whatever you want as long as you can come up with a, you know, evidence-based justification for it. Traditionally, the order would be of power movements while you're fresh. So power movements at the beginning, any plyometrics, any Olympic lifting work. Then you would go into strength and large compound movements, and then you would end with isolation and or single joint work. That's about it. That's the simplest explanation of that. We will dive into the rest of the questions in episode 112. So for now, I would like to end by thanking the sponsor of this podcast, Legion Athletics. They are the number one brand of all natural sport supplements in the world. You guys already know that I love them because they are scientifically backed as far as their ingredients and dosages go. You can find all of that on their website. I have been using several of their vitamins as well as their whey protein and creatine. I also am a huge fan of their non-stimulant pre-workout, their Pulse that does not have caffeine in it. I'm a huge fan. I love them. I wouldn't rep them if I wasn't a fan. Go to buylegion.com and use code Annie at checkout. New customers save 20% off with that code. If you are an existing customer, still use code Annie because you can get double Legion reward points if you do. Finally, please leave the podcast a review. Head to iTunes, give it 5 stars, leave a written review. It is much appreciated. That's how I get in front of more people. It pushes the podcast algorithm, essentially. I also choose a reviewer of the week and listener of the month. The listener of the month gets 50% off any non-membership program of mine, as well as a freebie from Frey Skincare, which is my favorite skincare company. You can always use code FDBA to save with them. Until next time, I am Annie Miller, and thank you so much for tuning into the FitzPro Podcast.